Welcome back to AA Opera Podcast, episode 101.
Such a satisfying episode number, isn't it?
Oh my god, yes. Before we get into how we are doing, I wanted to bring up the fact that we saw Knotten last weekend. And oh my god, I did write a blog post for all of you to read if you would like, but I thought we could also chat about that before we chat about our weeks. So, Ash, what did you think of Akhenaten?
Bold statement incoming.
Mm-hmm.
The best opera that I have seen to date. And it's officially made it. It was like, as the opera was going on, I was like, ooh, could it be? Could it be? And I didn't want to make that decision. And I don't think I did make the decision until I woke up the next morning and still felt the same as I did when I left the theatre. Akhenaten was the best opera that I have ever seen, and I'm a bit obsessed with it. Actually, I want to see Einstein, the Einstein one and the Gandhi one as well. I'm just like all Philip Glass fangirl right now.
Amen. I couldn't agree more. I think it's one of the, I haven't left an opera in a really long time, and then the next day put on the full soundtrack so I could listen to it again.
Exactly. Yeah.
I called it a soundtrack now. Do you realize that? It's not a soundtrack. I put on the record, or like I found it on Spotify and I played the album on Spotify. But it was just like, it's been the soundtrack of my week.
But I think, yeah, I see it as a soundtrack as well. I mean, Philip Glass is within that realm of composing for film. I think he composed, it was The Truman Show, I think. He composed music for that. And it was like a movie watching it. Just, well, I think I described it at the time as like an art installation.
Yes, you did, and I thought that was actually quite true to what it is. It is very much like it's a piece of art. There's not one thing about it. It's just it's phenomenal. Like, it's incredible. I totally get the hype. Also, I loved how we both were like, I feel so calm.
Yeah.
It's so inspired.
Yeah. It was amazing. And I loved how you ended the blog post that you wrote and just saying, good luck getting a ticket, because I do believe it is sold out, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
But I just, any opportunity you get to see this opera, because I'm sure it will be, you know, revived once again, go see it. You just have to. It's a must see.
Absolutely phenomenal, hands down. Go see it. But Ash, how are you? How's your week been since then?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, that would definitely be the highlight of my week since last week's episode. So yeah, everything around that just doesn't top it, in all honesty. Just the general week to week. And I've started purchasing daffodils, you know, because it's that time. It's that time of year, and daffodils have been making me smile, bringing a bit of brightness to my week. But how are you?
Still pregnant. Now that everybody knows that I'm pregnant, it's just like, now everyone can hear the answer that I give you each time you ask me how I'm doing.
Yeah, every week, it's still pregnant.
Still pregnant. But today, viewers wouldn't know this. Listeners wouldn't know this. But today I'm actually wearing makeup. And I showered and washed my hair, which is a big deal for me before a podcast recording, especially for on Zoom. I mean, when we have a guest here, I do make an effort, but not this much of an effort. And this I was like, Ashley's going to be surprised that I have a lipstick on.
Yeah. And I'm very impressed that the lipstick matches your shirt so well.
Did you assume that I wouldn't have matching lipstick to my shirts?
It's very nice. Very nice. And
to be fair, I buy shirts that I know match my lipstick.
Wow.
More than the other way around. No, but other than that, I am good. I had a wave of energy this week, which I haven't had throughout this pregnancy, which is one of the reasons why it's such an amazing thing that I'm wearing makeup now. But I have had a really rough time getting out of bed, not throwing up. Still threw up today, even though I'm 5.5 months pregnant. But yeah, I think I have more energy to do things now, which is why I've been making lists and nesting this week, I think. But who do we have on this week, speaking about pregnancy and motherhood? And
we have the amazing Kitty Whately, mezzo-soprano and also founding member of SWOPRA, a fantastic organization supporting parents within the opera industry. And yeah, it's a fantastic episode and we hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome, Kitty, to AA Opera Podcast. We are so excited to have you. Can you start off by introducing yourself to our audience?
Sure. Hi, I'm Kitty Whately. I'm a mezzo-soprano and I also am 1/5 of the SWOPRA team, which is a charity that I co-founded and co-run now.
Fantastic. It's so good to have you here. Can you tell our listeners what your first experience of opera was?
My first experience of opera was probably my dad is an actor, and he was in a program called Inspector Morse, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of. And the main character, Morse, was a massive opera lover. And so quite a lot of the episodes of Inspector Morse featured opera. And my dad had a cassette tape of The Magic Flute, which had featured in one of the episodes that my mum was actually in. I was listening to that, and I was listening to The Queen of the Night. I remember it came on, I think he was playing it in the car. And I heard this Queen of the Night aria, and my dad said to me, you know, this is one of the hardest songs in the whole world, and there's only a tiny few handful of people who can actually sing this song. And I thought, well, I'm going to be one of them then. And took it to my bedroom and learnt it phonetically. No idea what the words were, but listened to it a million times until I could do it and sat in my room going, So that was my introduction to it.
I think we've all had a go at one point, haven't we?
Little did you know you would be a mezzo.
Yeah, definitely not my rep.
So as you mentioned, both of your parents are actors, and as the daughter of two actors, was it a surprise when you picked opera over straight theater when you wanted to go into the theater world?
Well, it happened quite slowly and organically, really. I got into it via theater. I was so into being in anything that involved performing at school. So I guess, you know, I was always in all the school plays and everything, school shows, but particularly loved any that were musicals, anything that involved singing. And then joined the school choir when I was about 9, I think, and just loved every second of that. And that was a very simple, you know, we just sang pop songs, mostly in unison, occasionally in two-part harmony. And I just loved every minute of it. And so when I went to secondary school, I said to the music teacher, please, can I have some singing lessons? Mm-hmm. And he paired me with their peripatetic teacher, who was Rachel Nichols, who's a very, very brilliant and successful soprano, UK soprano, who I'm sure a lot of you will know of. And so she was my first singing teacher. And I just idolised her and just absolutely wanted to be her. Mm-hmm. So that's how it went classical from where I had been in the musical theatre kind of realm.
And today you've performed in a lot of operas, and you also perform in a lot of concerts as well. But what's really quite exciting is that you've recorded several of your own albums. We were wondering, how do you decide on the repertoire that you are going to put onto an album? And what is the process of recording?
Well, the three solo albums I've done have all come about in completely different ways. The first one, I was, you know, really young and just starting out, really. I was doing the BBC New Generation Artist Scheme. And so I wanted to make my first album, and had the opportunity through the brilliant Champs Hill Records label, who make it possible for young singers to make their debut albums. They pay for all of the costs that are involved in that, and they put you up down there at the studio. And so I sent all the songs that I loved to sing to Joseph Middleton, who played for that, and Joe came up with a fantastic way of linking those songs. He sort of observed that they were all English songs at that point. All my favourite songs were English songs, and they all, a lot of them fitted similar themes, which was English landscapes and you know, the beautiful parts of Britain. So he came up with that lovely concept for that album, which inspired us to find a few other things that would fit that. And my parents were on that album too. We decided that it might be nice to include them to have some poetry on it. So that became a really lovely sort of family project. The second one was all Jonathan Dove songs. I can't remember how I got into Jonathan Dove, but I am an absolute fangirl. I'm just completely... love everything he's ever written, and discovered that he'd written so many brilliant songs for mezzo. So I approached the BBC. I was still on the scheme at that point. You get the opportunity as an NGA artist to commission a living composer to write you something, and I said, Jonathan Dove, please. So he wrote me these fantastic three songs. And together with a load of his other mezzo rep, in fact, the complete mezzo rep, which actually I can't claim anymore because since then he's gone and written some more mezzo songs. So I'll have to make a volume two at some point. That's how that one came about. And then this latest one that's out this week, Joe and I have always wanted to record some Mahler. We've been playing together for decades and keep saying, oh, we must record some Mahler, and finally decided to get our butts into gear and get on with it. But since, you know, more recently, I've become really, really interested in championing women composers of the past. I'm really interested in unearthing women composers that have been written out of history. You know, I think there's so much to be said for championing living composers now, and there are so many brilliant ones, but I think in order to change the narrative, we need for composers, the core canon, to include women, and for us, for children, when they're learning about music and learning about different composers, for there just to be women within that set of composers that you learn about. So I said to Joe, if we're going to do Mahler and Strauss, we need to have some women on there as well. And so we set about with Swapra, which I'll tell you a bit more about in a minute, to unearth a load of interesting women composers from the same era as Mahler and Strauss. So that's how we went about that, and that has been the most fascinating and exciting journey, and we're really excited to be able to present these two women that I was particularly taken with, Johanna Müller-Hermann and Margarete Schweikert.
And do you then do concerts with this rep to like promote the album, or is it just the album's out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll now sort of tour this program. The more I think about it, the more I record, the more I wish that I could do it the other way around, you know, do a tour of a program and then record it when I know it like the back of my hand, and we've tried it in different venues and different audiences and really experimented with it and played with it, rather than learning it especially for the CD and then going straight in with it. So sometime I might try that, but we'll get to do that the other way around now. We've recorded it, and now we'll take it out and experiment with it, and I'm sure it will grow and change.
Is this the album that also deals with dementia and memory?
No, it's the theme is about is death, but we were really inspired by the last song of the Mahler, which, you know, the Kindertotenlieder, if you know them, they're so heartbreaking, and the subject is horrendous, the death of children, songs on the death of children, but there's real hope in them and light. And the last one particularly ends on this note of feeling such trust in God that I'll meet them again, I'll be with my children again, and they're in a good place and they're happy and safe now, and one day I'll see them again. So that was the starting point for the album, really finding songs that celebrated mortality in a sort of spiritual and beautiful way, letting go and surrendering to the inevitable. So it's, you know, when I say it's an album about death and grief, it sounds like it could be very dark and morbid, but I think you'll find it's not. I hope you'll find that it's not that.
I saw the video that you did with your parents for it, which was so beautiful, and it had like that up feeling, like at the beginning scene of Up, the Pixar film. Because it was just like you could see the love, and then the love continues even though the person's no longer there. It was beautifully done.
Thank you. I'm glad that you felt that. It was really what we were trying to do. We didn't want it to be entirely heartbreaking and devastating. You know, we wanted there to be a positivity in it, as there is in the song. But Fright is, you know, really that, exactly that.
On a different note, as you mentioned before, in addition to your thriving opera career, you are one of the founding members of SWOPRA. Can you share with our listeners what SWOPRA is and how it came to be?
SWOPRA stands for Supporting Women and Parents in Opera. And we founded in 2018. We came together, a group of women who work in opera, directors and singers, to talk about the imbalance within the industry of women in leadership positions, composers and conductors and directors, and other areas as well, how few women there were in these positions, particularly in the higher end of women leadership roles. You know, lots of women in the sort of middle areas of management, middle management, I think we call it, but very few at the top. And was there anything that we could do to take part in that conversation and move keep it moving forward within opera specifically? And within that, we of course landed on one of the major challenges for women, not the only, but a major challenge for women, being parenthood. And in discussing that, realised that that's not just exclusive to women, that being a parent in opera is really difficult, a parent of any gender. So was there something that we could do to support parents and to help encourage the industry to be more, their working practices more accessible to parents and carers? So that has taken years and years to settle, and still is in many ways. It's we have two branches really. One is the gender stuff, where we're exploring ways that we can encourage women into leadership roles, and the other part of what we do is supporting parents and being a pressure group, I guess, on the industry without pointing fingers and telling the opera companies off too much. We try to be a sort of consultant to the opera companies to say, look, these are the barriers that people are facing, parents, and these are some ideas that we've come up with that might, you know, we don't think would be too difficult for you to implement, that would make a big difference for parents. And alongside that, some kind of grassroots projects to actually help the parents who work in our sector. So we have we've been running the SWOPRA Cafe for a few years now, which started in lockdown and has carried on. It's a Zoom group, you know, like a coffee morning sort of on Zoom that happens once a month now. It happened every week throughout the lockdown, and now we just do it once a month. And that's been really invaluable for parents to just come together and have a community. I think I always found when I had my first daughter 16 years ago, I struggled to bond with other parents in the kind of antenatal groups because I didn't have anything in common with them other than the fact that we had kids that were the same age. And so having a community of opera parents, I think it means the world to be able to talk to people who really get the unique challenges that we face, because they really are different to people with normal inverted commas jobs. So yes, this minute yesterday got back from the SWOPRA retreat, which was our latest huge project, which has been many years in the making, down at Glyndebourne. We just held a 3-day retreat for opera mums, where they received postnatal yoga sessions and coachings and performance psychology sessions. All sorts. They're just jam-packed long weekend of a course that was tailor-made for mums trying to get back on the career ladder, having had a baby in the last few years. And it was really, really incredible. I can't really put into words what it's meant to us all, all of us that were there, not just the participants, but for us, the team. We're all absolutely buzzing from it. And now full of ideas about how we can run it next year and what we would do differently and how we can extend it to include more people, because it was a very small intimate group, which was lovely for them, but we'd love to be able to help more people. Please do have a look at our website, swapra.org, because there are all sorts of other projects going on, and I've only really gone into the parent side of what we do, but we're doing all sorts.
Super. So when you had your first child, did you have any guidance or advice around you for building a career in opera alongside being a mum?
No, not at all. And it really wasn't talked about, really. I was vaguely aware that there were some opera singers who'd managed to do both, but I was so young. I was 23. I was still at Guildhall, just finishing my degree. And I had no idea really what was going to happen or if I was going to be able to continue. I remember while I was still at Guildhall, any time that we did any sort of masterclass or had any industry professionals coming in who had children, I would always put my hand up in the Q&A section and say, "Do you have children? How do you make that work?" And the answers were usually, "It's really hard." There is no answer to that question. But I knew that I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a mum. And it was a happy accident at 23. I was very lucky that I had a huge amount of support from my parents. They really, really were, you know, a second family to my daughter, you know, a second pair of parents, really. So I just bumbled along, and I think that's what all of us do in this industry, probably all parents in any job. You just somehow make it work and you bumble along, and it's different for everybody, but there's no denying that it's very difficult for us. It wasn't talked about much, and I do remember teachers saying you can't have both, or, you know, if you want to have a career, mm-hmm. you don't have a baby. Mm-hmm. I know lots of people who were told the same thing. And certainly just something to be hidden from the opera industry. I can remember doing an audition actually when I was pregnant, and the artistic director of that company, no names mentioned, saying, "How are you going to do this job with a baby?" And I said, "Well, I've got a partner, and my mum's going to help me." And they said, "Oh, well, you know, you sing very nicely, but we think you're mad if you think you can do this job with a baby." So.
I will, yeah.
At which point you're also be like, if this was any other job interview, why would you ask that?
Yeah.
And how is that relevant to my abilities? You just said I sang really well. Mm-hmm. Your answer should be, you either fit this role or you don't. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be, how are you going to do this as a mother?
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't be the conversation.
Unacceptable.
At all.
Yeah, you're right. In any other industry, it would be a suable offense to say something like that in a job interview. And you can guarantee that no man will have ever been asked that question.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank mm-hmm. goodness for you're trying to change the narrative. And yeah.
Before, I was also wondering, what was it like then to be still at Guildhall and be pregnant and know that you were having, like, because that must have been also, you said it was a happy surprise, but it had to be a shock because you have this plan. What was that like for you?
Yeah, you're right. No, it wasn't a happy surprise at first. It was a terrifying surprise. It became, you know, in retrospect, it was a happy surprise. Well, I was just finishing. So I was pregnant for my final recital and I had no plans beyond it. I didn't have to turn anything down or pull out of anything. So in that respect, I had no plan. But I remember feeling immediately as soon as my daughter was born that I wasn't just going to stop. I felt very determined and wanted to get back on the horse as quickly as I could. But because I didn't have anything in the diary, I didn't pressurize myself to get on it too quickly. So I think I had probably a year or a good 8 or 9 months before I tried to sing. And then I sent out a load of letters by actual post, paper letters, to all the opera companies saying, hi, I'm just graduate, you know, with that sort of post when you just leave college and you've got such confidence and lack of awareness of how many people that you're competing against. Sent out letters to all the opera companies saying, I'm here and I'm give me a job. And did get some auditions and amazingly got an audition for the Glyndebourne Chorus, and went for it. And again, because I was so clueless about what a big deal that was, I wasn't even nervous. I remember thinking, this is ridiculous, I'm never going to get into the Glyndebourne Chorus. And so just feeling very relaxed and just going for it. And I did. I got onto the Glyndebourne Chorus. And so, yeah, it was a big sort of, oh my God, how am I going to do this with a baby? But my mum came with me. We literally moved down to Lewes, where Glyndebourne is. And my mum was my absolute full-time nanny and partner, really. And we just made it work, thanks to her. So, you know, I have a sort of almost like survivor guilt when I think about, when I talk to people about whether or not you can do this career with a baby, because for me, I've had it much easier than some in that I've had a huge amount of help. My mum and my dad, both of them have been around so much and done so much for me in the form of free childcare. But I know people who are doing it who don't have that support. So it's not impossible. It's just hard. And you just have to be really, really organized.
Since it's been 16 years, as you said, of you being a mother, what changes have you seen in the industry over those years?
Well, I'm proud to say that I think that since Swapra came onto the scene, it's just the conversations are being had. And I feel like we've made a lot of, we have achieved a lot. We've done some incredible projects and I'm really proud of all of those. But I think change is slow. And the pandemic has halted a lot of the positive change that was happening. So tangibly, I'm not sure that I could say all the opera companies have got on board with what we're saying and changed all their working practices and now everything's great. That definitely isn't the case. And it's really challenging, particularly now that the budgets are all so tight. Nobody's got time and resources and to prioritise these changes that we're suggesting. Changes to scheduling and changes to facilities and things like that. But the conversation has started and that wasn't being had. And I feel that that has empowered parents within the industry to not feel that they need to keep it a secret and it's not a taboo subject and it's not something that they should be keeping from their employers, and empowered people to ask for things that they need. So I think, for instance, I worked for a company recently and I was having trouble sorting out a school pickup one day. And so I just said to them, I'm sorry, my childcare's fallen through. I'm going to have to leave early to pick up my child. And I think 5-10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have had the courage to say that. I probably would have made something up or just bent over backwards to make some other arrangement that would have cost a huge amount of stress and money and not been the ideal situation for my child, or I would have said to the opera company, I've got a headache or I've had an emergency or something. But I think people now are a little bit more courageous to just say that nobody can pick my child up, I'm gonna have to go. And the opera companies are being really fantastic about that. As I say, it's not easy for them to make huge practical changes, but there's definitely a change of attitude. And all the opera companies seem really on board with the idea of trying to support their parent workforce as much as they can, do what they can. And I think we're trying to hit home with them, with the opera companies, that actually we don't necessarily need anything extra. We don't need more time off than the non-parents, or we don't need to finish our day earlier than most, you know, unless there's an emergency. But what we do need is information. We need as much information as you can possibly give us. So if you have a draft schedule that you haven't sent out yet because it's only a draft, please share it with us. Mm. I promise that we will take it with a pinch of salt and know that it could change, but it would help so much to know roughly what you're thinking. Just info, 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 info about the venue, info about the facilities at where we're rehearsing. Is there a fridge there if I'm breastfeeding and I need to express and store my breast milk? Is there a fridge there? No, there isn't. Okay, great. Now I know that. I can make arrangements around that. I'll bring a cool bag or whatever. Just, you know, we're not actually asking for them to provide anything more other than information and communication.
Yeah, it's super important.
But that's also such a small thing when you work in a 9-to-5 job. Mm. Doesn't matter what you're doing, like, but knowing that you will be home at a certain time does make it all easier. And that is something that, like, is so wonderful when they do send a schedule. It's like, okay, I can plan my weeks roughly. Mm-hmm. Even as someone who's not a parent, you're allowed to then take on other projects because you kind of know what your schedule is like.
Absolutely. It benefits everybody. And one of the companies that really have championed this and taken it on completely is Holland Park. James Clutton at Holland Park has been our absolute SWAPRA hero and has been the guinea pig for putting all these things into practice that we're suggesting. And he says it's been a huge success for them, not just for their artists, but for them in the office, their admin team. They said getting the schedules out ahead of time is such a relief for them on a Thursday night where they normally would have been scrabbling around trying to get the schedule out on a Friday. They now put out this long-term schedule, and yeah, changes happen. But it's so much less stressful than it was. And like you say, it's not just the parents that benefit. We are freelancers and we don't make a lot of money. Most of us, the majority of people working up, we don't make a huge amount of money. So we need to be able to supplement our income with teaching, and we need to be able to, or, you know, young singers, so many young singers working for opera companies need to continue their singing lessons. I mean, we all do. But if you're a young artist working for an opera company for the first time and you're working on a role that you've never done, to work on that role for 6 weeks and have no supervision, no help and no singing lessons in that time is a little bit risky. Mm-hmm. So if you know that next week that we're only working on Act 3, so we won't need you because you're not in Act 3, then you can book in a singing lesson or a coaching, or, you know, you can have a doctor's appointment, or you can book in your teaching that you need in order to supplement your income. So it really does benefit everybody, but it's not easy. I do understand that it's complicated. And the bigger the opera company, the more complex that system is. Mm. Trying to work out several different productions at once, and all the costume fittings and the coachings and the various other things that need to be worked out. It's really, really difficult. But I also know that a lot of it is to do with the way that it's always been. And so the fact that we don't necessarily get all the information about Tet Week, for example, until the Friday before is totally crazy, because they know the details of Tet Week. If anybody doesn't know what Tet Week is, it's the week that you're on stage. That will be booked months and months and months in advance, because they have to book the stage time and the stage hands, and they have to book the orchestra, and that won't change. The orchestra rehearsals particularly, that will not change. So there's no reason why they couldn't give us that way in advance, so that I as a parent know that in the week of, say, the end of May, I know that I'm going to have these evening rehearsals. We're going to be on stage, and we won't be called in the morning, but we will be called in the afternoon and evening. That is gold to me, to be able to work that out in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, being a mum within the industry, what information or advice would you personally give to expecting parents within the industry?
Just be ready to be super organised and flexible. But yeah, organization is the key. Think ahead and plan everything.
That sounds like two contrasting things. Be organized and flexible.
Yes. Yeah, be flexible about what you imagine to be your idea of success, I guess. You know, if your idea of success is to be Joyce DiDonato or, you know, Jonas Kaufman or whatever, then, like, you're going to be away a huge amount, and that's going to take its toll. could you reassess that and think, what would success look like for me? I can't, this is really easy for me to say, but I'm still on that journey. I'm still making those sorts of, having those thoughts regularly. I wanted to be Sarah Connolly. And actually Sarah Connolly's done a very good job of it and does have a child, but I wanted to have a megastar career. But I didn't, aside from not having the, I haven't had that career, whether or not that's anything to do with parenthood, you have to constantly assess what success looks like to you. And I have to constantly say to myself, look, I'm doing a couple of opera contracts a year, and they're mostly in the UK. And that is great. They're not the big companies, but I'm getting to do shows, and I love being in a show. And it's in a country that is where my children are and my parents are, so that we can, it's logistically possible. So, okay, I'm not a megastar, but I'm doing something that I love, and I'm able to work it around my family. So I think, yeah, my advice would be super organized and be flexible about what your idea of success is and what you'll be happy with.
So Swapper provides, as you said, more than just advice. How can people access the resources that you've created?
Sign up for our mailing list. Have a look on our website and sign up for the mailing list, and we'll keep you up to date. We won't bombard you, I promise. But we put out a newsletter sort of quarterly. And as I say, the Swapper Cafe is monthly now. Anybody can join that for free. Our next big project, now that the Swapper Retreat is over, is to work on the resources on our website. And that's going to be a major project for us. We're really hoping to put something together that will be really, really useful to opera parents, online, digital stuff. The other side of what we do, as I mentioned, is trying to support women specifically. The latest project on that branch of what we do is called Forgotten Voices, and it's been a big research project into composers, women composers of the past, in association with the Oxford Lieder Festival. It's actually been quite focused on song so far, but we do have plans hopefully to look at opera as well. Opera composers, there are fewer of them, unfortunately, women composers who wrote opera, but loads of song composers, and that's our major project coming up on that side of things. So 2 years ago it started in 2021. We had loads of students during the lockdown from all the major UK colleges who performed songs by women and recorded them for us. We're trying to build up a big database, because we found that there are tons of websites that list all the women composers of the past, and it's not hugely useful to me as somebody trying to program them to see, oh, this person lived, these are her dates, and she lived here and she was married to this person. It doesn't tell me much about her music. So we're really trying to build up a database of actual stuff here and listen to. We're working with Oxford Lieder on that. So I really hope that will become an invaluable resource for singers and pianists and anybody programming, really, to be able to look at this whole area of the Oxford Lieder website with loads and loads of women composers, and click on them and hear them and read biogs that have been specially commissioned that actually talk about their music and their style. And you know, you can instantly go, oh, okay, right, so she was she sounds a bit like this, and she's writing alongside these male composers, so she's kind of that sound world, you know. It's putting it in context.
That sounds incredible. Really good. Yeah. Really exciting. Yeah.
And so needed.
Yeah.
Like what you said, it's always like when you hear Alma Mahler, you're like, okay, so she was married to Mahler.
Yeah.
And she probably lived during that time, and you know, that's her, yeah, that's probably her style.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't actually know anything about her. That's so important.
Yeah. And there's such a tiny handful of them that you do hear of, Clara Schumann being the queen of them, and Alma Mahler, you know, the ones that, as you say, the ones that we've heard of, we've heard of them because they're attached to a man. We're trying to shift that a bit.
Yeah.
So as we're on that topic of women composers, what is the gender work that you guys are doing at Swapra?
Well, that the Forgotten Voices is the biggest thing at the moment. We ran some workshops with a member of our team who's now left us, Beth Hyam Edwards. She and Sophie Gilpin, my colleague, ran some workshops for women in particularly marginalised or sort of areas of the industry where women are particularly marginalised. And so I think there was one specifically for women stage managers and one for women directors, I believe. And one for women, I think, who work in percussion and brass. And this member of our team, Beth Hyam Edwards, who's now left us to go and develop her own organisation specifically looking at that, women who work in percussion and brass. She has started this organisation called GALSI, which stands for Gender and the Large and Shiny Instruments. And it's an initiative to support women who work in those areas of orchestras that are very, very seldom women in those roles. Do go and have a look at her website too. That was something that we were doing. I guess that side of what we do is it's a even slower progress, really, because it is a conversation that was already happening without us. We've joined a conversation. And there is loads of great work going on in that area, but we really, really wanted to be a part of that and make sure that opera specifically was being a part of that conversation and not forgetting it. All our focus recently has been on the SWOPRA retreat, but certainly now that that's out of the way, we'll be focusing more on the gender stuff as well. The team is run entirely by volunteers, and we're all opera practitioners, as I mentioned before, singers and directors, and so I think we're always looking, if anybody is interested, we're always looking for volunteers to help us. I think we certainly administratively our administration is quite a lot. It's a huge amount of work for busy volunteers, so it's everything we do takes a long time. Nothing happens in a rush because we haven't got the resources and the time to make it a full-time job, so nothing happens quickly, which is frustrating, but we've considering that, all things considered, we've achieved a huge amount in 5 years since we launched. If anybody's interested, please get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely, and we'll make sure that all of the important links are in the description of this podcast. Just as we round off, can you share some general advice for emerging artists in the industry?
Yeah, my main advice really to singers certainly is put all your time and effort while you have time into learning languages. Just focus everything on that, because that will fix a million problems and put you on the front foot in so many ways. I really regret not spending more time on my languages when I had the time and when I had the brain for it, and I had the brain to soak it in. I'd also say that anybody interested in doing recitals, put programmes together, think about programmes. I think at music college, you end up doing an English song, a German song, a French song for sort of assessments that you do. And you come out and you've got a lot of random songs in your repertoire that aren't that useful when you actually come to put a program together. So I would really advise putting together interesting groups of songs or learning entire song cycles so that you're ready to put together an interesting program when you come out. I spend so much of my time and money on language coaching when I'm trying to learn a role in a foreign language. Then trying to memorize it, which is much harder for me as I don't speak the languages. And then often working abroad and just feeling so humiliated that I can't make myself understood, in a restaurant, I can't ask for a drink without looking like an idiotic English person. I think languages, do it. It's boring, but get on with it.
Definitely good advice. In addition to all of that, thank you so much. But where can people find you online or in person to get in touch or see what you're up to?
Yeah, I was going to say, I do have a website, but I'm rubbish at updating it. So if you wanted to see what I was up to a few years ago, you could look at kittywakely.co.uk, and one day I might update it if I can work out how to do it, because I'm a dinosaur. But I've got a Facebook you know, like a professional page, Kitty Waitley Mezzo Soprano, and Twitter. I'm better at Twitter. Twitter is nice and simple for old people like me. And Instagram I try and do, but that's a bit complex for me. But yeah, Swopra, on the other hand, has a lovely shiny website that I don't do. So swopra.org, I think that's right. Go and have a look at our stuff there, because everything we've done is on there, and everything we will do will appear on there. And all our socials, Swopra, everywhere. Yeah, my new album is called Befright.
Is coming up.
A Soul Surrendered. That's out on the Chandos label. And I would love you to have a look at that.
Absolutely, we will.
Thank you so much, Kitty. This has been so informative. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So this week, following on from what has been such an informative episode, we'd like to discuss opera and parenthood. And Avi, as you're the mother-to-be out of the two of us, I would...
Oh my goodness.
I would like to start off by asking you, did you have any reservations, concerns about being a mother within the opera industry?
100%. Because not only growing up, but also like looking at people that I knew in the industry who were like 15 to 20 years older than me or a generation above, no one that I knew had children. So it didn't seem like it was a possibility. And I think that led to me assuming that you couldn't have both, mm-hmm. or that you couldn't have both well. Because mm-hmm. then when I did meet people who did have children, they said I had to give up the career. So I didn't have the role models to show me that it was possible. But over the last couple of years, my outlook has completely changed on that. And I think that more and more people are also openly talking about how it's not a big deal. But I feel like it's also a cultural thing, and like where you're from and the role of a woman in the household is very different in different parts of the world. And the idea of a working mother is very different in different parts of the world. Like, and I think that... I think that definitely affected everything. We do live in a modern age. Families have both parents working or one parent at home. Like, different things happen. But I think actually the more I look into it, it's more the financial side that's scary, not the career side that's scary. Does that make sense? Like, differentiating the two.
Yeah, I think it's really important to differentiate the two. And I think it's not necessarily... something yet that is, you know, made clear as two separate discussions. But it's good that you're seeing it in that way.
Yeah, because it's definitely the idea of everybody currently in the UK, and this is a conversation that a lot of people are having, are choosing not to necessarily have children because they can't afford childcare. But that has nothing to do with the careers that they have picked. And I think that is where my mindset kind of changed.
Yes. And I think that's where the opera industry falls down, and that we are trying to make changes here. But if you were in a corporate career, for example, you'd leave with your maternity package and you'd come back after 9 months to a year and you carry on. Obviously, that's not easy, and you've got the whole discussion around the gender pay gap, which I'm not going to get into now, but the opera
industry, different question.
The opera industry, it's always been this taboo, and I'm not really sure why, but I am pleased to see that there's organizations such as Swopra. We've had some brilliant guests on this season, this whole podcast, successful opera singers who are leading lives as mothers as well. So it's...
And fathers,
yeah. Yeah, I think through doing this podcast, I've now got a very different outlook to the concerns I had when I was younger, thinking about is this what I want? So yeah.
And that is it for episode 101 with Kitty Whately from Swapra. Feel so podcasty today with these different headphones.
You do have some pretty podcasty headphones on this morning. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. We really hope you enjoyed it. If you want to subscribe and rate this podcast, that would be amazing. And if you head over to socials, we are AA Opera everywhere, and you can get involved over on there.
And if you think we're really thirsty and we should probably drink something, you can also buy us a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which is linked on our Instagram as well as on our website, which also has a new blog post all about our experience at Akhenaten. So lots of things to check out. It's been great speaking to you. We will talk to you next time.
And next week, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.